Han visste det ikke ennå, men noen av de beste barndomsminnene han skulle ta med seg videre i livet, var dagene hjemme syk fra skolen med bestefar som barnevakt. Ikke det at det var så innmari gøy å være syk, men han fikk bestille McNuggets til lunsj og se på TV i sofaen mens bestefar leste papiravisa ved siden av. Og det er nettopp sånne dager som betyr mer enn det virker som der og da. For sånn er livet, og McDonald's er bare en liten del av det, tross alt.
Hei, og velkommen til podcasten Frilanslivet. Det er en podcast av min kollega Kristina Skreiberg og meg, Hanna von Bergen. Vårt mål med denne podcasten er å være en faglig og inspirerende kanal for alle dere som jobber for dere selv i medie-, kunst- og kulturbransjen. Ukens annonsør er regnskapsprogrammet Fiken. Både Kristina og jeg har brukt Fiken i mange år, og det er fordi Fiken gjør det enkelt å føre regnskapet selv. I Fiken så kan jeg nemlig sende fakturer, ta bilder av kvitteringer med Fiken-appen, jeg kan levere moms og næringsoppgaven, og jeg kan gjøre alt fra samme sted. Det gjør frilanslivet mitt lettere, rett og slett. Vil du prøve Fiken gratis i 30 dager? Gå inn på fiken.no. Today's interview will be in English because today's guest, Nastia Säde-Rönkö, is from Finland. And Nastia is an interdisciplinary artist that works with video, performance, installation, participatory art and text. And she is 36 years old and she works internationally and lives both in London and Helsinki. Her projects investigate the relationship between the digital era, power, humanity and future of our planet. So big topics there. And in 2019, she won the award Young Artist of the Year in Finland. And she's educated both in London and Moscow, and she has exhibited around the world in venues including Kiasma Museum of Contemporary Art in Helsinki, the Museum of Moving Image in New York, and the Sydney Opera House, to mention a few. Hi, Nastia.
Hi.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And you are in Norway just for a couple of weeks, and we managed to kind of squeeze in this interview. And as I've understood, you travel a lot in your work. And you live a bit both in London and Helsinki, or at least pre-COVID. How is it to travel so much and kind of be in so many different places?
First thing, I think it's because I really love it. And then somehow I managed to like make my work international because I love traveling. But it's also because I think the art world is quite mobile. So there are a lot of things happening, like residencies or exhibitions around the world. So that is a big part of it. But I think it's like mainly curiosity about, especially when making video work, to have new places and new people and new kind of landscapes. And this is, yeah, pre-COVID.
And I get very curious around kind of how you live and work. It's a very broad topic. Yeah. But if you're always like on the move, or how is it to kind of build something, a base or a foundation from somewhere, but being out and traveling all the time? It could be with a partner or just friends, and kind of having habits and all that. How do you find the difference between being at home, so to say, and kind of going out?
I lived in London for a very long time, over 10 years. So that was always a kind of, you know, I had a home, I would go back there. And then after a while, I traveled so much, or I would stay in places for a longer time. So it felt kind of stupid to pay rent, basically, to a place where I stayed just few weeks or months in a year, and that kind of hassle of like finding someone to be there and so on. So then a few years I was totally kind of nomad, so I was I had stuff in a storage, that kind of life. But that was also very hard, like you kind of just want a place to go and relax. So now I have like a place in Helsinki, so that's more home now, and then I travel from there. And then, of course, COVID changed everything. So I had to really, like, rethink the way I work. And it was good in a way. So like you have to, you know, really root yourself into a place. And I feel we were quite lucky, maybe same here in Norway, but in Helsinki, that although places were closed and so on, but we never had that kind of lockdown where you weren't allowed to go out. So it was like a lot of, you could walk, and I was lucky, I had a studio I could walk to, and we could do that. So it was kind of slowing down for everyone, I feel. And it was good, but at the same time, I did miss, you know, this kind of experiences. But saying that, I think it really made, like before, like pre-COVID, if I traveled to from Finland to Norway, it wouldn't really feel traveling, because we are so close. And also the culture is quite similar, or generally in Scandinavia. But now it feels like really super special to be outside of Helsinki. It's like everything feels somehow fresh. And at least I really appreciate things differently, like being able to go somewhere and do my work. So it's almost like, you know, a wake-up call in a way.
Mm. Have you noticed kind of how much you miss it by being away from it as well?
I have, but at the same time, I think I realized how stressful it is to travel and move places, even if you stay for a few months. And then, of course, you get like close to people and you make friends. And then now it you can't, you know, see friends in real life who live in another side of the world. So it's been really nice to be with people who are in Helsinki, for example,
yeah,
and really like spend time differently. Kind of
build something a bit more long-lasting
in yeah. a way.
And I also, because I'm not in the same situation, but I moved to Sweden with my boyfriend, and I still have all my work here, so it's still very close, as you said. It's
yeah.
quite the same inside Scandinavia, but it's still like as soon as you go outside your home, you kind of change your habits, or you don't have the same things in your home, or you're a guest somewhere, or it changes kind of the frame of your everyday life.
Yeah, it does. I always had this kind of problem, because I love books and I have a lot of books, and those are the worst things to, you know, carry around. So I was always like having to choose a few books that you would take, and now I have all my books in Helsinki, and it's like, wow, I can just, when I want to, even like you, I read a lot for my work, so I need some kind of reference, and I can just walk to the bookshelf and have it instead of being like, oh, where is that book? Or what do I Google? Where do I get it? So it's like also little things that you kind of try to appreciate when you can't move so much, I think.
Mm. Yeah, it's very interesting, because I a lot of freelancers can kind of probably relate to this lifestyle where
yeah.
if you're a musician, you go out and kind of play a lot of concerts, or you're on tour, or
yeah.
your work kind of leads you to different places often as a freelancer, which can be wonderful, but
yeah.
it's something to really reflect upon what it also costs.
Yeah,
it's the same if you go on stage or you have a lecture, or it's really fun and it gives a lot of energy, but it also drains you in
yeah.
another way. So it has this very, it has both sides in a way.
Yeah, I think that's totally true.
In your artwork titled 6 months Without, you lived entirely without the internet in London for 6 months. And everything from personal to professional communication, navigating a city, socializing and working happened offline. And this work was done between 2018 and 2019. And I'm really, really curious to hear more about this project. This is very bold in our way of living, where internet, you're so kind of codependent on the internet for everything you do. Paying bills and
yeah.
answering work emails and getting together with friends. Why did you want to do this project?
I get asked that a lot. it was quite old idea, even like 2014 or something. And I, obviously I couldn't do it before 2018 because of the emails and everything. But the idea came from kind of understanding. I guess I'm still a generation who grew up without the internet so much. Like, I mean, I don't remember it that well, but I know it happened. because internet is only like, I think it's like 30 years old. So it's a very young thing. And I was like, it has entirely, completely changed our society. Like the way we work, the way we socialize, the way we create relationships, the way we, yeah, even travel. Like everything has changed so much. And I was like, how did this happen in 30 years? And then from there, I started to think about like, what if it collapsed or crashed, which is, you know, totally, it has happened, it can happen. It's not so difficult for the internet to collapse. And then I started to research all these different aspects and think about how would society be if, not like going back to pre-internet, but if internet was like limited or challenged, which it is in some countries already. And that just led into a rabbit hole of different kind of aspects. Like I didn't know before 2018 how, I mean, now it's obvious when you think about it, how much electricity and infrastructure there is to have the internet, but like how damaging it is for the environment and like all this, like watching YouTube videos, how, you know, bad it is exactly. And all these things were quite new to me, and they were not really, you know, like everyone reads and thinks about like how bad flying is, and it's not even, everyone knows, but not really that many people know that, that like using the internet is equally damaging.
Yeah, you don't think about all the online storing in a way that you have on different clouds, and that actually needs to be, have a server.
Yeah.
Like a server kind of village almost somewhere in the world to be kept safe and kind of being able to be uploaded.
Yeah. Yeah. All the cooling systems and the mining and data centers and it's like underwater cables. It's just so much stuff that is kind of hidden. And for us at least in Europe and other places, it's so easy to go online. It's like available everywhere. You don't really think about it when you like Google stuff. So I was like, the starting point was like, how long could I be without the internet? I was like, a week feels weird, but like I could do a week. And then I was like, could I do a month? I was like, well, I'm not quite sure. And from there, 6 months was like, it was long enough for me really to change and for me really to understand if I could do it or how it would work. But at the same time, I didn't want to become like a hermit or somewhere. So a year felt...
Never to be seen again.
Yeah, I mean, a year was another option, but it was not possible. And 6 months felt quite like a nice time and quite beautiful in a way, period. And I decided to do that in London because it had to be a big city. So I didn't want to be in a countryside, like it would be almost like retreat and too peaceful. So it had to be really in a place that was kind of home and familiar, but at the same time a place like, I don't know, if I got lost in a part of the city I didn't know and I didn't have a phone, it need to be challenging. I think in Helsinki I would just know how to, you know, I would know without asking anyone where, how to get home. But in London it's always a possibility that you are somewhere in the middle of nowhere. But anyway, then I went to Wysing Art Center for a 6-week residency to kind of develop this idea and research and prepare it, because it was actually a lot of preparation. Like I had to think about everything, like bills, our phone, our bank account. Like I contacted a lot of people before so they would know that I'd be offline and so on. And then through Wysing, I was offered the residency at the Somerset House Studios, which is central London. And I had a studio there where I would kind of go every day, commute every day. yeah, for 6 months.
How did like a normal day look like during this 6 months? And how was it just first days? How was the feeling?
The feeling was, the first days, I was kind of really excited and empowered and terrified at the same time. I was like, this is crazy. What am I doing? Like, this is never going to work. And I think it took really like 3 weeks to a month that I really got used to the routine. And the routine was like, I went to my studio in the morning, and a lot of people ask like, what do I do? So, okay, before I say that, I should say that I set up an out of office reply into my email. So whoever emailed me during that time would get an automated email back that explained the project a little bit. Then it had my studio address at the Somerset House, and it said that people should either come to visit me or send me a letter, like old-fashioned letter on the mail. And what happened was that I started to get a crazy amount of letters from people all over the world, like people I didn't know, of course, like friends and people I knew. But I would receive maybe like 2 to 10 letters a day.
Whoa.
Most days. There were a few days, of course, like I didn't get any. But I think it was something that really touched people, especially people in their 20s who had never been without the internet and who were like...
Maybe I never sent a letter even.
Also, who were like... kind of just really intrigued and really terrified and excited about the idea. But then also older people in their 60s who were like, I hate the internet. Which, I mean, I don't hate the internet. I love the internet. But who really remembered that time of being when the world didn't have internet. I was just so interesting to talk about technology and the internet and what it means and what it changed with like different generations and different kinds of people. And I had also asked before I started the project, like several interesting people to write letters with me, like curators, yeah, cultural workers, writers. So that was really interesting also. So a lot of my days I was writing replies because it takes a long time to handwrite replies and receiving letters and reading letters and yeah, just working the same way, but without the internet.
Speaking of this with letters, because I read that in your work as an artist, you're particularly fascinated with how concepts such as love, slowness, or affection can be silent, yet radical ways to be and act in the world. And when I read that, I really thought about the whole letter aspect of this project.
Yeah.
Because it's such a... different way to communicate than writing a text or on Facebook or an email, even though it's still somebody writing to you.
Yeah.
So it's still the same content in a way. It's just the format changes everything.
Yeah, I think the format of letter is one thing was slowness. So you, an effort, I think. So somebody had like sit down, written to you, walked to the post office, bought the stamp. It takes time, and it's like somebody really wants to send that letter to you. And then to reply, a lot of people were surprised that I replied. I think part of it was like, is this really a thing, or is she really doing it? But part of it was like, it still works, like the mail service works. But what I found also was that once you do that, you don't want to talk shit in a way. I don't know if I can say that, but like people wrote really personal stuff and the letters were often very long and very interesting. So you don't want to write the letter that is just like, hi, how are you? You know, something vague. So they all were really deep and I really appreciated that. And then I would, you know, be personal back. So in a way you are vulnerable and you share something and then I do the same. So that was quite special. And I think also you get an idea of people based on their handwriting. So that's very interesting.
How was it to suddenly go off the internet? Kind of, did you notice any change within yourself?
Actually, yeah, a lot. I have to say that I kind of hoped that I, not hope that it wouldn't happen, but I thought, like, is it really, does it really affect us so much in terms of our I don't know, inner peace? That sounds horrible, but I really did. Like, I was way more relaxed and calm, and I wasn't so anxious, and I felt that I could concentrate. Like, if I read the book, I was like, okay, I can actually read the whole book in a few days. Now I feel like if I read a book, it takes forever because there's always like emails to answer, people to chat with, or something.
Yeah, your mind kind of goes off in different directions. Yeah, very easily.
I was really focused, and I think also London is like really hectic city. The previous pre-offline me would be like, if I missed a bus and there were 3 minutes to the next bus or 5 minutes, it's like, oh my God, that is so long. You get anxious, you wait. And then I got really over that. I was like, 5 minutes is nothing. Like, it's fine.
Did you get a bit of more of a like a Zen version of yourself?
Yeah, totally. I really did. And it was really nice just to like read in a bus, or I kind of allowed myself to get bored or get like somehow really be in that space. And at that time, and that was really nice. But that took like, I think like 3 months. It wasn't like immediate. I kind of noticed it slowly. So it took time, definitely.
Because I can also imagine just in the beginning that it's almost like an itching feeling of, you know, needing to watch something or kind of check up on this or that. Or it's because we have this feeling that, we just, kind of jumps into our head that we need to check something.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing that I got rid of. That was hard to get rid of. Like, even after like 3-4 months, I would check like, where's my phone?
Oh,
like just automatically. And then it's like, oh, like very quickly you're like, oh, I don't have it, or I don't need it.
Yeah.
But it was almost like a bodily, very like physical thing, a reaction you do, like you reach for your phone, or you always are aware where your phone is and you get anxious when you don't know. So that was all gone, for example. That was like one thing that was really nice not to care about.
In many ways, it just sounds amazing. Sounds like something I really get super eager to just go out and do the same. But then it's the whole aspect of work and, you know, friends and the whole practical life. So you did this as your work, so that's kind of a bit different. But what parts of this project have you implemented now, like afterwards?
I try to keep things like not looking at the phone at night, or like when you go to bed, you just go to bed. Of course, that didn't work. Yeah, things like that, like, well, maybe things like if I'm with people or with somebody, like I don't look at my phone. I mean, unless there is something I need to do. But generally, I try to like not to look at my phone when I'm like with friends or something. But that might be like what everyone does. I don't know.
No, I don't think that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
But it's, to be what you're in at the moment, to kind of be present.
Yeah, I think to be present, that is a good thing. But I mean, it was really, really hard at the same time. Like, I felt very lonely at times, because although I knew, like, my friends were really sweet, like they would like come and tell me like, oh, I bought tickets to go to this gig or something, because like they wouldn't message me. Or I would get invite letters via mail. Like, it was very nice. But at the same time, I was like feeling that I missed out all the time. And I think that was just like, I'm not sure exactly what I felt I missed out, but I felt like this kind of anxiousness about something's happening and I'm not there.
Yeah, you can't take part. You're not part of what everybody else is
You're not part of the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's really hard to choose to be less dependent on the internet or on smartphones, or because you kind of choose to take a step outside of everybody else.
Yeah, and I still like, I would buy the newspaper almost every day, so it wasn't like I was totally unaware of what's happening, but it still didn't feel the same. like that it still felt like I was somewhere outside almost.
Mm. What I found really interesting about this project is that it's we all kind of know it, but
yeah,
we don't really do that much about it. Maybe we try to kind of read a book instead of watching a TV show, or
yeah,
but it's like a habit that kind of creeps up on you.
Yeah,
and you need to be quite harsh with yourself, and it takes a lot to distance yourself from your own from your habits that you didn't know that you established even.
It's definitely that thing, everyone knows it. It went like 2018 or 19, it wasn't like we know how it affects us in terms of anxiousness and sleep deprivation and all those things, but it's like really, it's really, really hard not to be online, like even for 24 hours.
Mm. What was the goal, or what do you want other people to kind of, what kind of effect did you aim for?
Well, it was kind of hard to know what it would be before I started, but we were filming a lot of it. So if you saw an exhibition, this work would be two like video documentations of the 6 months and the letters and, you know, things like that. But the goal was really to think about the change that the internet has made, or the change that happened by the internet and technology and social media in our lives on a personal, or like true personal level, and yeah, on a wider kind of context also.
I was super inspired by this project and will really try to kind of have a look at my own internet habits.
På bussen, en helt vanlig torsdag, mottok Tore tilbudet som skulle forandre alt. En e-post, en lenke og en nettside med rabatter på det nye utstyret han egentlig ikke hadde råd til, men hadde så lyst på. Det eneste han rakk å tenke var at dette var nesten litt for godt til å være sant. Og det var det det var.
Over 70% av alle nye nettsider svindelsider. For sikkerhetens skyld har alle Telenor-kunder sikkerhetsfiltre som blokkerer falske nettsider. Se hvordan du kan bli tryggere på telenor.no/sikkerhet.
What do you find being the best part of being a freelancer?
I think it sounds a bit of a cliche, but I think it's that freedom. So I guess being your, you know, of course I have deadlines, I have things to do, and I have like horrible, boring things like taxis and whatnot, like we all do. But at the same time, it's still different kind of freedom than going to the same place, same time, and someone else kind of telling you what to do. So I think that's the only way I can work now with this, with making art.
And how much do you work? It's probably a bit of a hard question to answer, but it's always interesting to kind of hear how you structure kind of being on and being off in a way.
I'm actually really bad with that because I work a lot, and then it's really, I think also because my work is so personal and it's so kind of overwhelming and overtaking my life. So I don't necessarily have this on and off switch. So, and in terms of work hours, I like to work in the morning. Like the later it gets, I get tired and then I don't really function anymore. But at the same time, for example, in here we have had very, very crazy hours because I think, you know, when you film and there is light or the weather condition or there is a lot to do and everything takes time, so then the days are very long. So it really depends. But now, I mean, I have a child, so that has changed a lot of things, so that like you can't do those crazy 15 hours day anymore. So now it's very much like, I don't know, 9 to 4 kind of work, and then at night when she sleeps.
Yeah. How old is she?
Almost 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's also another kind of element into the mix in terms of traveling a lot and being away and having that lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah,
how
definitely.
How has that been for you?
I mean, she's traveled a lot also, but then I think the older children get, they, or at least I feel this with my child, that then she, you know, she has like best friend now and she has this kind of things that I don't want to take away from her. So in a way, then it's different to have a base. Like then you kind of think differently. But then, for example, when I did this project 6 months without in London, you know, we were there for like 6 months. So that's kind of, then you just take the kid with you, I guess.
Yeah, so yeah. She follows you and she follows the art.
Yeah, sometimes.
And what do you find most challenging about being a freelancer?
I think it's that like kind of constant worry about money. Like even when things are good, you always have at the back of your head. But I think it's also my generation or people like younger than me. It's like this kind of idea of a job that you have for life and you have pension and whatnot is kind of doesn't really exist so much anymore. But yeah, it is that thing like, what if I can't do next project because there is no one funding, or what if I can't pay my housing? I think it's that that kind of worry that is always somehow there. I can't really think of anything else that I don't like. Yeah. And also maybe this is smaller, but like this thing that I do are everything. Like you have to, you know, you can have a bookkeeper and you can have this, that, and not. But at the same time, you are kind of responsible for everything and you have to think about all these different aspects that are not strictly your work. Like yeah. I would ideally just think about my art, but like that's obviously not possible. So I think those things are the things that I don't like so much.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can relate.
Yeah.
Another very interesting artwork that you have done that I'm very keen to hear more about is titled For Those Yet to Be from 2016 to 18. You made short video clips from 27 places in the world that has been destroyed by human actions. And each place you hold up a cardboard sign with a message to future generations. And this project was exhibited in Norway last autumn and winter in different train stations in Norway. Can you tell us a bit more about this particular project? What did you want to explore?
Yeah, I think for especially this one started with traveling and with writing. So when I think about ideas for art projects or when I travel, I write a lot. And at the time I read something about the Colorado River turning, I think it was yellow or something. It completely changed its color because there was a leak from mining. And I started to think all this landscape and places that we have somehow damaged through our activities. And then it was just like, they're everywhere, kind of. But at the same time, I didn't really want to show this kind of, you know, ugly places, a lot of trash or this kind of landscape. So I went to places like glaciers that are very beautiful and epic. And the language refers to somehow demonstrations or protest, but the signs I was holding, they were kind of very poetic. So they were somehow ambiguous, loose messages for mainly for us, but also for future generations.
Can you mention an example of a place and kind of what the sign says?
Well, the first place I went to was actually in Finland, in Lapland. It was this very beautiful swamp that they were kind of selling to a mining company. And I like this kind of magic hour in the morning. It's around like 5, 6 a.m. So it's kind of hard to wake up, but it's very beautiful light. And I went there and the sign said something about karma. And at the same time, this epic rainbow just came on camera behind me. And I was like, it was very beautiful, but that somehow stuck to my memory.
How did you get the idea for this artwork?
For this project, I think it was the article about the Colorado River that I mentioned earlier, where the whole landscape changed. But then obviously I think the times we live are, this is our reality now that we have, you know, pandemic and natural disasters and climate has changed and so on. So in a way, that is the reality of my work. But at the same time, it's kind of like grieving for the things that we lost or we are losing, and also this worry for the future of people and other species, but also like this kind of hope that we have at the same time. So all those things and emotions were present in this work. I can never really exactly say where idea comes. It might be like a little thought or a little text or something, and then I start developing it into like thinking how it would actually work as a like finished project.
Mm. And you mentioned that you travel a lot in your work as well, and you love to travel. How has it been to kind of work with a project that shows the climate crisis whilst also traveling a lot?
Yeah, I've been asked that quite a lot, but then it's not, I mean, obviously like flying is bad, but then we can't really, I mean, everything is a choice, like eating meat is bad, fashion industry is terrible, using the internet is actually really, really is worse than flying. In a way, I think you try to do the least bad with what you can, and then you make choices. And I don't think travel is in itself is bad. Like, for example, I mean, slow travel. Like, when I went to, there is one filmed in Siberia, so I took trains and stuff. So when there is time, I don't fly, also because I don't, well, because of the emissions, but also because I personally hate flying. I don't like the feeling of being in there. So I don't think it's like, you know, like fashion is not innately bad. It's just like what you wear and what you buy or what you don't buy. In the same way, it's like how you travel, how often do you travel, how long do you stay in places. And like ideally, I like to travel in a way so that I have time. So I don't like this kind of, unless it's quite close, like Norway, but like if you go to, say, Australia from Europe, I don't like to be there like few weeks. I feel like it should be longer time.
Mm.
But I think it's also that like moving somewhere, like you need time to adapt your mind and your body and your like other side of the world. And so I think slow travel is something that interests me.
So you're quite long for each place if it's far away.
Ideally, yeah, I think in Australia it was like 6 weeks or something a while ago. I like to do art residencies, which is like you have a studio and a place, and often they are like a month or 2 months or even 6 months sometimes. I never really like this kind of in and out kind of traveling.
Mm. The fast paced.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's necessary. Like, sometimes you can only stay for a week or you can only go for a few days, and it's what it is. But if possible, I like to almost like feel that I live in another place for a bit.
Yeah, I think that's very inspiring. And a bit back to this project for those yet to be. What surprised you the most going around and filming these 27 different videos?
I think that the biggest surprise was how easy these places were to find. So every single time I went to a new country or a new place or new continent, when I spoke about the project, there were like a lot of people helping me. Every single time they were like, oh, but you have to go here, 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 here. And they would list 10, 20 places where they thought it was like, you know, the worst thing had happened. I should go and film there. And it became like, you know, that feeling that, okay, I could just step out of my door and go anywhere
and
do
1,000 videos.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's sad.
So that was, yeah, I think that was kind of the biggest thing.
How has it affected you? Because in one way you paint these beautiful landscapes and pictures and capture these in your videos. But on the other hand, you kind of see a lot of depressing places which is being destroyed or damaged nature. How has this 3 years affected you?
Well, it was, yeah, it was kind of sad. Sometimes I felt like I was in a funeral. but it was very interesting at the same time. Like one place that I remember is Chernobyl, the nuclear accident, and it's kind of in a way that was strange because that place is full of life in a weird way. It's like bad and horrible what happened, but then you see all these wild animals, for example, in there, and they're probably really, you know, not in a very good condition. But it's there is like glimmer of hope in a way, but it's quite dark sometimes. It's almost like, okay, people can't live here, but there are some weird creatures like cockroaches who will survive like anything pretty much. But sometimes I try to think like the earth is not gonna end, but maybe we are, or maybe like other species are, which is very sad. But at the same time, it's like I try to think the time of the world is very like we are just a tiny little second in the timeline of the earth. So sometimes I would think that way if I saw something very kind of damaged.
Do you find it a comforting thought?
I do, but at the same time, I don't want to be too comfortable in that thought because I don't think people do things or like act on urgent things that we should act on if we kind of let ourselves into this kind of, oh, it's fine, we don't care.
I'm going to die anyway.
Yeah, yeah, like that's totally not what I think we should do or think.
No, I very much agree. And I think people react very differently to the climate crisis, that some people almost have a hard time to really feel that you can do anything, or other people get very empowered to be able to do something. And so there's so many different emotions and reactions. And I know you talked a bit about this in terms of the role art can play in this, that's different than scientists or the media. Or can you elaborate a bit on that?
I think with art, it's like generally not necessarily only about in relation to climate crisis, but it kind of touches on your emotions, or it makes you think differently. That if you read the article, like we all know the numbers, we all know how bad it really is. And that sometimes maybe that can be like a wake-up call for people and we do act. But then I think sometimes we need something more poetic in a way. We need art and culture, and we need to read and see movies and look at art. And I think, you know, I'm not a scientist, so I don't want to give like numbers, but maybe I want to give like thoughts or emotions or experiences that people can have through my work. And I feel I react to like when I read how bad things are, like I get quite like desperate and sad. And then I start thinking like, well, it doesn't matter, we all die. But then when I see an artwork that really touches me, and art in terms of could be cinema or a book or visual arts, I feel like empowered and I feel there is hope.
Thank you so much for coming. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for inviting me. The same.
Thank you.
Denne episoden laget i samarbeid med og med tilskudd fra Finsk-Norsk Kulturinstitutt. Finsk-Norsk Kulturinstitutt jobber for å styrke kulturutvekslingen mellom Finland og Norge. Instituttet fremmer samarbeid, dialog og mobilitet mellom finske og norske kunstnere, kulturaktører og organisasjoner, og produserer et mangfoldig program for et bredt publikum.